right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Newborn Libertarian. This is your host, Kim, and I'm bringing on somebody you heard before, but he was on during an episode that we called Libertarian Parenting, so he didn't get my questioning beforehand. Anyway, let me introduce him before I get into questioning and grilling him. So, welcome, Sean. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So, now let me give you the question that I give everyone when I have them on a show. Please tell me about your journey into libertarianism. Were you always a libertarian, or just go ahead and give me the story of how that came about?
Well, I can honestly say I was not always a libertarian, sadly enough. Grew up in a Republican household. Was told at one point in time that, Bill Clinton's vice president? Al Gore. I was told Gore was, that he was the Antichrist, so that everybody had to vote against Al Gore. But after that, joined the military, didn't enjoy that too much, then still a Republican, voted Republican throughout that entire time, and then around 2008, Hillary Clinton was running for president, so was Ron Paul, and I heard Hillary Clinton say, man, you know, it'd be really nice if everybody had health care, and I thought that was a great idea, and then I got to thinking about how the heck that's going to get paid for, and realized that I didn't want to pay for everybody's health care. Then I heard a Ron Paul speech at work, of all places, which is kind of weird, and went down that road. After Ron Paul, I found Tom Woods. Tom Woods quickly turned me to the Mises Institute. The Mises Institute turned me to Murray Rothbard, and Murray did a wonderful job at converting me from a libertarian to an ANCAP in about 6 weeks.
Wow, 6 weeks?
Yeah, his Anatomy of the State deconstructed the state for me, and then I dove right into his For New Liberty and the Ethics of Liberty, and that was it.
Wow, that's you totally put me to shame. I had the usual 6 months.
Nothing to be ashamed of. I think that's what we try to shoot for in the libertarian movement. Well, those of us, excluding those diehard minarchists that refuse to come to the dark side.
It's all good. I just love every time.
I'm talking to you, Kyle Wagner.
Oh goodness. And just for the audience to know, we're going to have that segment. I don't know if we have time at the end of this this podcast, Sean. We might pull up that page and have a go at the new segment. I haven't made the theme music yet, but we have a new segment.
I'm on game.
That page is special. But and when you said Al Gore is funny, every time I think about it, I actually have a picture on Facebook somewhere. When I was in school, as a there was a jazz band performance where we met Al Gore, and I shook his hand, and we all looked miserable in that picture, and he was in the middle of it. So there's photo evidence of me being a jazz band and Al Gore standing there, and I didn't know how evil he was then, but I did meet the man.
So what are you more proud of, meeting Al Gore or being in jazz band?
Definitely being in jazz band. That will always be a crowning achievement.
that's good. That's good. Yeah. Al Gore was the devil in my household, which I didn't know who he was really. I actually had a signed picture of Bill Clinton because when I was going through school, we had an assignment to write the president, and it took about 4 months to get a signed picture of Bill Clinton. It was straight up one of those like face shots that models give. Totally weird, but. My dad quickly got rid of that, and I'm not complaining. I wouldn't know what to do with the picture of Bill Clinton anyway, but it was odd. It was very odd.
That's, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say that is quite odd. But alright, well, that's an interesting journey, but
I have a feeling that Bill Clinton often gave those photos to people, usually, you know, interns.
And they just haunted their nightmares, all the terrible things they had to go through. That's if they're still alive, anyway.
I think that's how he got Monica Lewinsky, was that face shot. Well, no pun intended.
Love that face shot. Oh, man, that's so gross.
I did not mean to actually make that joke. That was an accidental pun.
Yeah, but of course I had to laugh at it because I'm disgusting. Anyway, but anyway, let's go into our topic. We are going to actually jump into nullification because I think this is a powerful tool, and this is one of the reasons that when I actually started to run for office, I was a minarchist still, and then I became an ANCAP, and then I was just thinking, oh, crap. But I decided to... then I decided to keep running because I think one of the most powerful positions, if you're going to run for office, would be on the state level because of nullification is one of the things that I would think was awesome. If more people understood its power, which a lot of people don't, so this is the reason I want to do this episode, so more people would understand the depth of nullification and its power, but I think we need to start all the way at what it is, and this is going to be awesome. Action-packed, maybe not action-packed episode, just knowledge-packed episode. So, Sean, if you can go ahead and tell us what nullification is, and we'll start with the history of it.
Well, in a single word, called nullification is a state saying no. It is a state denying to work with the federal government to implement what it wants. Recent examples would be like the Real ID Act. I think it's 20-something states have refused to implement it. The obvious example would be weed. Everybody and their mom is trying to legalize weed, or at least medical marijuana. So what nullification does, and it can take two or three forms, usually it's on the state level. The states are passing laws banning their officials to help the federal government. So the attorney generals are here in the state of Kansas, the secretary of state, after he passed a nullification law for gun laws, the secretary of state, Chris Kobach, received a letter from Eric Holder, where Eric Holder threatened to sue the state and take the state to court and whatever he wanted to do. And Chris Kobach sent a letter back telling Eric Holder to, go ahead and come in here and try to enforce the laws. See how far you get. And I don't like Chris Kobach. He's a D-bag. But on that, he did great. He's a very intelligent man. So Wyoming did the same thing with gun laws. I think Utah did the same thing. And it's just happening all across the country. So the states are passing these laws to prevent, one, the federal government using their resources, the state's resources, to get what it wants. And two, the states don't have enough money to be doing this. So, and there's a second and third way to use nullification. Another way is for the people themselves to just say no. People do this all the time with speed limits. You just don't obey the speed limit. Yeah, one person out of 1,000 might get caught, but does that really deter anybody from speeding? Oh, no. You know, our speed limits used to be 55. Here in Kansas, now they're 75. So that's another form of nullification. But obviously, the most popular one is the state level, because most individuals don't want to fight the federal government head on.
Yeah, which is a sad story, because it can be a powerful tool. And I know if anybody's looked in the past, which a lot of people don't, it has been used, but a lot of the things that I've seen thrown against nullification when you bring it up is they'll say it's racist, or you're racist for using nullification, and I guess they tie that to the Fugitive Slave Act or possibly something like that. Have you heard that?
Yes, you hear it often. I do write for the 10th Amendment Center, so I'll put that out there.
Love
so
the 10th Amendment Center.
I am associated with them. The idea that nullification was used for slavery is absolutely ridiculous. Now, it was used in the 60s to fight segregation. That did happen. There's no denying that. With everything, there can be good and bad. As far as slavery, though, it was never used for slavery. Actually, the South referenced nullification as a reason for seceding, because the northern states were passing personal liberty laws, as they call them, and refusing to enforce the much harsher fugitive slave law from the 1950s or the 1850s. Connecticut, Wisconsin stood up to the federal government, the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now that's something you don't hear. Stood up to the federal, or yeah, the federal government and the Supreme Court, and wouldn't let them come in to take a citizen of Wisconsin. So it was often used against the South and the federal government to keep them from claiming what they thought were their slaves, and most assuredly, some of them probably weren't. So, but to say that it was used for slavery is just absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, how dare you impart truth? Oh my goodness. But, but so I know when nullification was, so when did nullification become something that we could use? Was it constitutional? When did it become something that would be a tool that we could use?
Well, you could say that nullification is built into the history of these United States. You could point to the 1770s, if you wanted to. It wasn't explained or espoused like it is today, but in fact, it was used. The Stamp Act, against the Stamp Act, against the Sugar Act, the Intolerable Acts. That's what the colonists used. They refused to allow their governments, their colonial governments, to help the crown implement these laws. Now, did they go? They went as far as beating some of the crown's agents. Now, I'm not saying people should be doing that, but they did go as far as doing that. They nullified in practice the Stamp Act. They nullified in practice the Sugar Act. That and they were great at running sugar back and forth, bootlegging. And then, see, 1798 is when the principles were actually written down in the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, written by Thomas Jefferson for Kentucky and James Madison in Virginia. Now, in the original draft that Thomas Jefferson wrote for Kentucky, he did use the words nullification. They were later struck out, but in 1799, they went ahead and reaffirmed it. Kentucky went ahead and reaffirmed it in some resolutions in 1799. And James Madison's, he wrote it in 1798 for Virginia, and he didn't use nullification. He used the phrase state interposition. And what he said is that the state should interpose itself between the federal government and its citizens to protect its citizens when the state deems that the federal government has overstepped its authority. You could look back to the Federalist Papers. I forget exactly which one, but Alexander Hamilton says one of the best ways to, I think it was Alexander Hamilton, it was him or James Madison, said that one of the best ways to keep the Union in check was to simply not cooperate with officers of the Union. And they were right. It's been used over and over again. Some of the best nullification happened during the 1850s. Is it constitutional? Yeah. There's nothing in the Constitution that bars nullification. Now, people will say, what about the Supremacy Clause? Well, that's fine, but they never ever finished saying what the Supremacy Clause actually says. At the end of the clause, it says, in pursuance of the Constitution, or in pursuance thereof, referring to the Constitution. Well, who gets to decide what's in pursuance thereof? With states being the parties to the compact, they're the ones that created the Union. The Union did not create the states. I don't care what Joseph Story says, or any of his followers, although he's dead. These states did create the Union. They had to ratify it. 9 of them ratified it. The Union came into existence. The rest of the states followed. So the states created the union, so therefore they get to, in my opinion, and many other people's opinion, they are the arbiters of what is constitutional and what is not. They are the ones that ratified it. They're the ones who gave certain abilities to the union. And they can certainly rescind them if they wanted to secede, but that's a different topic. But to me, the agent is always less important and does not get to make decisions outside of the principal. And the principal will always hold more sway than the agent. The agent cannot tell the principal what he or she cannot do. In this instance, the union would be the agent, and the states would be the principal. So, to me, it's blatantly obvious, if people actually understand their history, that it's constitutional. Sadly enough, in today's day and age, that being knowledgeable on history is not what the cool kids do. So, and even law professors and history professors, they get this wrong, and it's utterly stunning. But it is constitutional.
Yeah, even the Heritage Foundation apparently gets it wrong, which is a sad story.
I get emails and actual letters from the Heritage Foundation asking for donations, and it ends up in the trash. It's they're a relic from a past time, and they don't believe in nullification. And I'm sorry, but if you don't believe in that, I don't want to give you. All you're gonna do is just say, let's just take it to court and see what happens. And it never works out for the states. It never works out for the people.
Yeah. And one's got to wonder why. I mean, obviously, I can see why nullification isn't put in place very often. If you happen to make sure Marxist ideals get in your public system, you could eventually brainwash a ton of people out of understanding what the heck nullification is. So, do you think that plays a part into why suddenly the states can't stand up for anything?
The states seem to have been neutered after the Civil War. There was a whole issue with being in the Union, being outside the Union, which was extra constitutional, if not unconstitutional. I lean towards the latter, not the former. But after that, they seem to have lost a lot of nerve. There was some nullification here and there after that. Like I said, in the 60s, apparently desegregation was kind of a big thing in the South, and they didn't want that to happen. Oh, God, no. But since then, see, in the 70s or 80s, anything really happened? 20s, 30s, nothing really happened. Up until about the 90s, and who would have thunk it, California led the way. They seem to have found their legs, at least on one topic, against the feds, and that was medical marijuana.
Yeah, and, surprising.
The Supreme Court ruled. I know. Who would have thought that weed would have got liberals excited about fighting authority? But, they seem to have found their legs with that, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled numerous times against California. And California said, what are you going to do? The court's not going to be able to. The court can't send anybody in there to enforce it. Well, the court can't call up the National Guard. Congress, certainly nowadays, I don't think they have the fortitude to attack another state like they did in the 1860s. Nobody wants to see it. And what member of Congress is going to suggest that we attack California? You know?
Yeah.
But they led the way. They found the legs on that. And ever since then, it's kind of been peeing. So I'm glad to see that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I think, they just have this fear of the federal government, and they're just happy about that sort of thing. And they feel like if they nullify anything, then... the scary federal government's going to come after them. I mean, even the Congress is fooling people into thinking that they're powerless, because I definitely know in certain things, even in the case, I think it was about 2014, that I think Chris Ann Hall was talking about, where, there was something to dealing with marijuana, I think it was, where the Congress just pulled the purse strings and wouldn't fund the DOJ to stop something, and guess the federal government can't do anything, because guess what? The Congress has the purse strings, not the president or the DOJ. So the Congress actually does have power to do things when they're saying, oh, we can't stop this. Like, you know, they want to defund Planned Parenthood. They have the purse strings. So whenever they're trying to talk about, oh, we can't do this if the DOJ wants to come out and, you know, stop a state from doing something, we can't stop them. Yeah, you can. You just defund the DOJ's branch on what they're going to do, and then suddenly they can't do anything. So the federal government lies to us a lot about, you know, a lot of things, and I think states kind of see the federal government as this big bully that, oh, we can't stand up and say no to them. Well, you can.
They most certainly can. As far as Congress, they seem to have ceded a lot of power to the president. They don't seem to think they have much power, but you're right, they have the power to the purse. They are deathly afraid of shutting down the government like it's a bad thing. What happened when Ted Cruz shut down the government back in, what was 2014, and they shut down monuments? What do? They always shut down things people want. God forbid they defund the Army's band, because we need that. No, what they do is they defund things people actually count on, that they've gotten used to the government providing, like the monuments or the Social Security checks. Will they defund, you know, the security for the president? Will they defund the security for Congress? Oh, God, heaven forbid, no. Defund that old lady's Social Security check so she can't get food, though. That's cool. So you're right, they keep people in a state of fear, especially about government shutdown. Shut it down. Let it shut. Take a break, guys. Yeah. Come on, Congress. I know you're listening. The NSA is tapping us. I know that. Why don't you guys take a break? Take a pause for the cause. Let us breathe a little bit. Send people their money. Shut down things that actually don't need to be on. Like, nobody wants the Park Service. Nobody. I'm tired of having to pay $6 to go camping in a property that nobody owns. Just shut it down. But you're right. They have the power of the purse. They just don't ever use it. As far as defunding the DOJ, I believe what actually ended up happening was the executive branch funneled money from a different program in the DOJ to fund that. I don't know if that's absolutely true, but I think I remember hearing something about that. And that does happen on occasion. That's how George Bush funded several things when Congress would not give him money for his little pet projects. But the states, they're terrified of the federal government. Well, I should say they're terrified of not getting the federal government money, which is how most of the regulations that we have, aside from the two clauses, the general welfare clause and the necessary and proper clause, that's how everything else gets passed, like nationwide speed limit laws. You know, we got that because Lord knows the states can't fund the roads. So we got money from the feds, and they said, "Hey, you want this money?" We're like, "Yeah, we'll take the money." I said, "All right, well, why don't you turn those speed limits to 55, and you just put a couple of zeros on this check, and we'll make it happen." Yeah. You know, so the states are just afraid of not getting their money back. But if the states were smart, they would stand up, as they're starting to do, stand up against the federal government, say, "Hey, look, you know, we can tax our own citizens," or no. Maybe if they would actually balance a budget and not run deficits like the federal government, they wouldn't have to rely on the federal teat to get by.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what's interesting, guys? If you gave us something that was worth paying for, I would probably give you the money.
Yeah. But sadly enough, you know, Oklahoma got a ton of money for their roads from the federal government when this... they still do. And they have, like, the worst... I've been across the country a ton, and they have the worst roads I've ever been on. But the nice thing is, they're never on construction. So I don't know what Oklahoma spent that money on, but it wasn't the roads. And it's nice to not have construction. Although, if they're going to tax you for it, at least have the roads somewhat nice. You know, I'm tired of having to replace my tires every time I drive through Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, we've got the problem in Las Vegas where the road's just always under construction. It's like, what's going on here? I don't see anything improving. I just see traffic cones.
We have a road here in Wichita, Kansas, Kellogg. It's the main highway. It's Highway 54, 400, that runs through Wichita. And it has been on continuous construction since 1977. Which, by the way, is a year it was supposed to be finished.
That's amazing. Well, great. My roads. Like, if we didn't have the federal government, who would make my roads look like crap?
This is a local and a state and a federal boondoggle here in Kansas, so it's pretty bad.
So, do you have any other interesting nullification stories of any states actually using them? Because it seems like a lot of the stories that I see about nullification involve cannabis.
Yeah, well, that's obviously the most prevalent. The Real ID Act is another one. Gun control is, I find that one just absolutely fascinating, because you hear people all the time say, well, you know what, you can't nullify federal gun laws. Everybody's just gonna die. There's gonna be blood. That was the argument for Kansas. People just gonna die. Just death and destruction and despair everywhere. And yet none of that's happened. You know, and the government hasn't came in here and arrested anybody or tried to shut anybody down. Now, it's not quite like marijuana, where people are. You know, you have, like, dispensaries in California. Like, there was, like, 1,000 dispensaries in Los Angeles. The DEA has nowhere near the capacity to shut that down. And now that Colorado, I can't remember if it's Oregon or Washington, and Alaska have recreational pot, there's no way. They might shut one or two shops down, but there's no way that they're going to be able to shut all of them down. I want to see that. I want to see that with the gun laws. I want to see individuals taking that step, gun shops taking that step, saying, okay, well, you guys want to ban guns or ban interstate commerce of weapons, so we'll make the entire thing here in Kansas, and now what are you going to do? I mean, they would use this, I'm sure they'd take it to the Supreme Court, but so what? They shut one gun shop down, another one pops up. The DOJ is just going to do the same thing that they did with weed. Like, hey, you know what? We don't have... We're just not going to worry about this. So that's what I'm kind of hoping for. But, like, Texas is kind of nullifying the Fed. They're setting up a gold depository.
Nice.
It's going to act like a bank. You can have a debit card, which I think is just absolutely awesome. As a hard money guy, I think the idea of paying with silver or gold is great. And they're supposed to be expatriating their gold back from the Fed soon. We'll see if that happens. Countries haven't been able to do that, so I don't know if Texas is going to be able to.
Well, Texas, you know, but it's its own country.
So, and there's, let's see, the right to try nullification. It's nullifying, some states are nullifying the majority of the regulations of the FDA, and some are just taking on the regulations that keep end-of-life patients from trying new drugs. And what this is doing is it's allowing patients to try drugs that are still being tested. So if it does work, great. You know, if they don't have a chance of living without that drug, well, you know, what's to lose in trying it? So Arizona, I think Colorado, Mississippi, I think they've all implemented. It's a fairly popular bill. Let's see, Texas, Nevada. Yeah, look, there, your home state has that. Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana. It's in 27 different states. Florida. Let's see, we have the Hemp Freedom Act. Kentucky, Senator Rand Paul. I know people give him a lot of crap for how he ran his presidential campaign. I give him a lot of crap for that. But no, he's leading the way in the Senate to do that on a national level, which I don't think is going to go very far. But he's helping with his in-state personnel, his in-state senators and House representatives in the state of Kentucky to pass law stamp at the universities, which is a lot more than anybody else can do. Colorado can now, since weed's legal. People are just growing hemp all over the place there, which is, shout out to Colorado, great job.
Yeah.
I like to see hemp being grown. Not a big pot fan. I don't really care if you smoke pot, but I'm a huge hemp fan. Let's get that going. One that's been rather disappointing, though, conservatives, I'm talking to you, is Obamacare. There was a big hoopla when it passed that conservatives were not going to implement this. They weren't going to do it. The governors were going to stand up, take a stand against the federal government, against Obama and his overreach. And what happened? All they did was sue. All they did was sue. Kansas put up a resolution saying, well, we're not going to do an exchange. We're going to make the feds do it. Oh, my God. Why don't you protect the citizens? Conservatives really dropped the ball on that, which is not surprising, considering the other half of liberals. No offense, conservatives. No offense, liberals. But come on. That was a big flop on the conservative side, which I really thought it was going to get some legs with all the tough talk, but nothing really came of that. One interesting story I've been talking about how states have been doing things. The NDAA of 2012. It's infamous now. Nobody knows what that is. It's the government's ability to detain you indefinitely without you getting a lawyer, without
habeas corpus, nothing. Kidnapping?
You don't get anything.
I said AKA kidnapping.
Yep, you get disappeared. So, and that's still in effect. It gets signed every year with the National Defense Authorization Act every year. But not just states are taking a stand. Counties and cities all across the country were so appalled by this that they didn't wait for the state. The city was like, we're not helping. Counties were like, we're not going to do this. Michigan, it was huge uproar in Michigan about it. So it was great to see that cities and counties themselves were taking a stand, that it's even on a more local level than the state. Let's see, what else? People nullifying license plate tracking. That was a big deal with the ATF and the DEA there a while back. Tracking gun owners going to and from gun shows. But a lot of people are upset about that. In a lot of locations, this has happened more on a local level than a state level, but they're kicking license plate tracking out of the cities and counties, which is nice to see. So
yeah, it's like, geez, it's stalking us everywhere, man. I just wish California would take more of us. I mean, they definitely jumped on the cannabis, but I wish they would do something about nullifying the gun laws. Because they're just thinking, we need more gun laws. Let's just limit how many bullets go in and everything. And they still manage to have more shootings in California with all the gun control. I'm like, guys, like, why does the logic connect in your brain that having more gun control is not helping your city at all? Like, you notice how Texas is not having a bunch of shootings happen, and they're, you know, they just have open carry just now. So I'm like, guys, nullify the stupid gun laws.
It's very interesting thing. And then conservatives and liberals do the same thing. They find their pet projects, and so they'll nullify, you know, weed in, or the weed laws in California, and then nullify gun laws in Kansas or conservative states. But they, like you said, they never ever connect the two. So California was deeply upset about, I think they even filed an amicus brief during a lawsuit saying, hey, you know, Kansas and these other states, they can't do this. They can't nullify gun laws. Yet they're the ones who led the way in modern day nullification. So you're right, they don't connect it. Like, it's the same thing, just something that you don't like. Which I'm like, hey, I'm cool with both. You want to smoke pot? Smoke pot. You want to own a gun? Own a gun. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Don't shoot me, and don't smoke in my house. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
You want to carry a gun? Carry a gun. I carry a gun. Here in Kansas, it was funny. We were able to open carry handguns the longest time. Kansas finally had a preemptive law put in place, so cities and counties couldn't restrict it. But we've always been able to open carry in Kansas. We just weren't able to conceal and carry. And now in Kansas, you can get the permit, but you can conceal and carry without the permit now. So, but they don't seem to notice that conservatives are literally doing the same things liberals did with weed. And that is the template to follow. Weed has been phenomenally, has done phenomenal in showing the path on how to nullify federal laws. That is the path that most nullifications should take.
Yeah, and the thing is, states have all of the right in the world to be nullifying, because this is the purpose, is you're supposed to nullify all unconstitutional laws. And guns and gun bans, any restrictions, are blatantly, purely unconstitutional.
It's amazing that these people, like I said, we ban guns in California, we'll ban guns in Massachusetts, we have guns in Kansas, we have guns all over Texas, we can have weed in California, we can have weed in Colorado, you can't have it in Nebraska. Matter of fact, they sued Colorado. Oklahoma and Nebraska were so upset about this that they sued Colorado. You know, come on, really? Y'all are doing the same thing with the gun laws. Get over it. This is the way it should be. If one state doesn't think Obamacare is unconstitutional, wants to keep it, okay, fine, keep it. Let Kansas nullify it. If I don't agree with the gun ban in California, and I think the people shouldn't agree with it, but if go to ANCAP land right now, which is going to follow the Constitution, then it is perfectly okay if California wants to ban guns and Texas wants to nullify it. Now, it's still an unconstitutional law. There's no question about that. But just like when the Alien Sedition Act came into force back in 1798, 1799, all the way up until Jefferson was president, the entire country was cool with that law, and it was blatantly unconstitutional, except Kentucky and Virginia nullified it. Well, okay. Certain states are going to see things as unconstitutional or constitutional based on the constituency and the makeup of their government in that state. So if California wants to, you know, leave the gun ban in effect and Nevada doesn't, that's cool. You know, pick your state. Liberals will flock to what they want to, conservatives will flock to where they want to, and I guess all the libertarians are going to go to New Hampshire.
Yeah, there's going to be just a huge, huge group of people in New Hampshire after the way things are going right now.
I won't be going. I've been to New Hampshire, and it's a lovely state. I made the mistake of going in the winter, and it snowed like 3 feet, and it was cold. I do not do well in the snow or the cold. I don't like it, so I'm going to stay farther south than that. So a place where it snows and it melts in the same day, that's ideal for me. I want to see the snow. I don't want to touch it.
Well, I just think maybe they should try that in Las Vegas, because Las Vegas, I swear, is like one of the most libertarian cities. So maybe if they had just found a way to make this place more libertarian, that'd be great.
Well, yeah, if you look at how much land the federal government owns, I think it was like 98% of Nevada is actually owned by, well, they say they own it, it's owned by the federal government. The federal government cannot own Nevada. The state is that's taking part of the state away. The people of Nevada own that land. So the federal government shouldn't have any part of that. And I don't know why they own parts of Nevada anyway. No offense to Nevada. I've been to, it was outside of, like, north of, I don't remember. It's been so long. But it was nice. It was mountainous. It was high desert, though. You know, there's not a lot in the high desert except shrubbery, sand. You know, why own it? I mean, you're not going to turn that into a national park. Nobody's going to be like, I take that back, because they do that in New Mexico. They have a desert that people like to go see in New Mexico. But not that many people want to go see a desert. They're not going to pay to go see a desert. So
well,
just amazes me that the western half of the United States is owned by the government.
Yeah. I was like, well, the good thing is it's definitely less desert now, because my mom, obviously much older than I am, said the rapidly changed, because she's like, literally there was parts where it's just nothing but dirt for a long while, but everybody, when they hear where I live, they go like, oh, do you live on the Strip? I'm like, why in the world do we live on the Strip? Like, everybody just lives in a hotel.
that's, Isn't that where everybody in Las Vegas lives, right? It's right on the strip. Right?
Yeah,
just boxes, hotels. You guys just live in casinos, right?
Yeah, just totally in casinos. No, we don't have actual houses or anything. Just never. That's just what we do. Just live on the strip.
Do you guys get paid in poker chips?
Oh, yeah. We don't have actual money here. We don't do fiat money. We do fiat poker chips.
That's great. Awesome.
So, are there any other details about nullification that you might have that I missed asking about?
Well, I do think that nullification is extremely important for people to understand. It's a very powerful tool that the states and the people of the states can use. I don't think it's proper that the government can ban a light bulb for people making a light bulb or using a light bulb. A simple exercise, go into your bedroom, well, not specifically yours, the listeners should not go into your bedroom specifically, but...
It's my private property! Just kidding, not really.
The listeners should go into their bedrooms, okay? And just look, to try to find something that's not regulated by the federal government. Your bed, your pillow, your blankets, the carpet, your flooring, period. The table, unless it was homemade, but even then, the wood's regulated. The stain on the wood, regulated. Your lamp is regulated. Your damn light bulb's regulated. Go to your bathroom. The tile on my bathroom floor is regulated. The water pressure in my shower is regulated. My toilet bowl and how much it can flush is regulated. There was no instance where the founding generation, even the most big government guy, like Gouverneur Morris and Alexander Hamilton, were like, you know what? We should, back then it wouldn't have been, a toilet would have been like, we should regulate the outhouses people use. We should regulate the candles people use to light their homes. No, that was never a consideration. The federal government was never, ever supposed to be that close to the citizen. What was supposed to be that close to the citizen was his local government. And then behind that, his county government. And behind that, the state government, and then behind that, the federal government. You weren't even supposed to hardly ever see, unless you had to go to the post office. Now, it's gotten so out of control, and people have gotten so used to what is going on that they don't care. They think it's perfectly fine. The Constitution, to them, is a relic. And the Constitution can be debated on a later episode.
Yes.
But they just simply see it as another European country. We should be able to do what we want. It's just a democracy, which it is not.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that's the worst. People think it's a democracy.
And the majority should be able to run amok over the minority, unless that minority is a certain color. Which, in that case, there's protections for, this and that group, which is unconstitutional, unless the states themselves want to. Then that's debatable now with the 14th Amendment. But people need to really understand what nullification is, how to implement nullification, and how to push the legislators to do it. That's what you need. You have to have the constituency understand what it is, have the backbone, and then have those people vote into office that will actually follow through on the state level. So like your campaign, that's why states, the state campaign, state level campaigns are so important. Get into the Senate, get into the House legislature in Nevada. Do something, disrupt it. Put these ideas out there. Let other legislators know, because they most likely don't, that they can stand up to the federal government. They can't. They don't have to just be angry and curse Obama, under their breath, or Hillary, or Donald Trump, or whoever the next villain's going to be. They can actually do something. They can take steps right now to improve the lives of those that are living in their state. People want medical marijuana. People that I take care of in hospitals would like it so they don't have to take narcotics for their pain.
Yeah.
When they take narcotics, it just makes them tired, makes them constipated, they get nauseous. They want to be able to take marijuana so they can eat, they can stay active, they don't get constipated, they don't have all these horrific side effects that some of these pain medications have.
Yes.
They want these things. And is that too much to ask for the state to say, hey, hey, tell your state legislature, hey, back, why don't you tell the feds to back up so those people that are sick here can get what they need? You know, same thing with the right to try bills. You know, let these people, I say let all of them try it if they want to. You know, I don't really care. But at least let the people that are at the end of the line that have nothing else to try, they want to live, obviously, most do. Let them try these experimental drugs. What could be the worst thing that could happen? They die. Well, they were going to die anyway. At least let them try something. What is so horrific about that? Do we really need somebody to hold our hands and say, now I know you're about to die, but I don't want to take this medication. I don't want you to take this medication because you might die. Holy crap. We don't need that kind of hand-holding. Some people might like it. Okay, well, why don't move to a state that wants that? Move to California. Move to Oregon or Washington or Massachusetts. Go there. Build your socialist utopia or your fascist utopia or whatever kind of utopia that you want. But stop trying to force these things on a national level. There are 320 million people in this country. And we think that was a 400 and whatever, 500 and whatever in Washington should rule and regulate the 320 million. Washington, D.C. doesn't know what Kansas needs. They don't know what Kansas schools should be teaching because they don't have the necessary information. They think, what did Hayek say? To think that you could do something like that is the pretense of knowledge. Okay, they don't have what statistics can't provide. Here in Kansas, they don't know the culture. They don't know what the way things are here, the mannerisms and all these idiosyncrasies that Kansans have that make them tick, that make them want what they want. They don't have these things. They can't possibly know what Kansans want. Why don't you let Kansas regulate itself? Why don't you make sure that we're cool with the rest of the world? You know, don't let North Korea go all crazy and try to send their kite nuke over here. You know, we don't need Kim Jong-il putting that nuke on that kite, trying to fly it over here. You know, stop that from happening and just leave Kansas alone. Let Kansas take care of its own schools. Let Kansas take care of its own roads. You know, maybe Kansas wants to drive on the left-hand side of the road. God forbid Kansas do something different. These states are supposed to be petri dishes of experiments in government. All we're supposed to have is a Republican form of government. So let them have that. Let them experiment with what they want. Let California do what it wants. Let them have pot-smoking hippies if they want. Let them have socialism if they want, because the Constitution obviously doesn't bar them from having it. Let Kansas be as conservative and Protestant as it wants. Let them do what they want. Let Texas be as weird and crazy as Texas is. That's the way things should be. You don't have to have one size fits all in 50 different states. Can anybody honestly say that the people of Texas should be helping govern the people of Alaska? Two totally different, they're like two different countries. They have like nothing in common except some of them speak English and we all pay taxes to Washington. There's no reason that either one should have any say in the other's internal workings. Let them be.
Well said. Well said. That was one of the best rants I think we've had on the show.
Well, you know, I try. There are other. I do think that people really need to thoroughly understand the theory. Or at least the history behind nullification and why it is constitutional and why it can be so effective. Those are two things that I think people really should understand. And the place that they can go to the 10th Amendment Center. If you don't want to be a member, don't be a member. You know, all you're doing is helping them, you know, nullify laws if you become a member. You can do like $3 a month. Or go buy Tom Wood's book, Nullification. Tom, you owe me for this. Go buy his book, Nullification. Great book.
Yes.
You can read You know, I have blog articles about this on 5thAmendmentCenter.com. You can just understand why it's so powerful. Understand the compact theory of how our government came to be, and everything else just falls in place. You're like, okay, so the state created the government. Well, then it's obvious the states can say, hey, that's not constitutional. You know, everything else kind of falls into place.
All right, before I even get us out of here, we're going to try this new segment that I decided to start up, and I'm going to read to you a conversation Kyle Wagner had with somebody just to be nice to the other person that was in this conversation, which, if anybody wants to actually join the Shit Kyle Wagner Says page, I'll put the link on there. But I'll read.
That is a totally awesome page. I recommend everybody go look at it.
Yeah, but I'll read it to you, and then let's see if you can... let's see what you'll have to say about this, Sean, when I'm done with it. So, Kyle Wagner says to this person in this discussion, they use force. Democracy is a peaceful way of changing the people who are in charge, as opposed to a violent revolution. Obviously, once they're in power, the new leaders enforce the laws they want. That's how laws work. The other person says, is using force peaceful? Kyle replies, no, using force isn't peaceful. Other person says, so how is democracy peaceful if it requires force to operate? Kyle says, it's a peaceful method of regime change. Law enforcement is never peaceful. The other person says, but didn't you just say the required force to operate? Kyle replies with, democracy is a peaceful method of regime change. Governing isn't peaceful.
and the guy that was talking to Kyle, he did a great job of pointing things out. Now, for me, the issue is, I really hate talking to Kyle. And I've had, obviously, you've seen it. I've had numerous conversations with the guy. What I don't think he's seeing is democracy, it appears peaceful. It has the veneer of being peaceful because people use a ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what would happen if people didn't vote? Okay? You could have a stagnating government. Okay? What if you have the entire populace just up and decide not to listen to the laws or regulations that government puts out? Do you think in a democracy that government would let that go? No. There's no way. There's no... What if the majority of the people... You don't even have to have everybody. If the majority of the people say, hey, we don't like what you're doing, we're not going to vote. We're not voting because you guys never listen, so we're not going to vote and we're not going to listen to you. Do you think that the leaders in charge would be like, oh, that's cool. No, we can totally play. We can just, oh, no, y'all can be in charge. We'll just sit back. We'll just hang out, do what you guys want. No, what are they going to do? They're going to use force to enforce the laws. There is always force backing that. That democracy is not peaceful. It has a veneer of being peaceful. It looks peaceful. That's like being passive aggressive. They're the same thing. Democracy is just a passive-aggressive form of government. You say, okay, y'all gonna vote, and we won't blow your face off for, you know, voting. So, you guys kind of have a say. But once we get in office, we're gonna do what we want. And then you guys have to listen to us. And that creates a second class of citizens. You have those that make the rules, and then you have those who have to abide by the rules. Here in the United States, we're a constitutional republic with forms of democracy, more so now after the 17th Amendment was put into place. We're closer to direct democracy than we have ever been. So when we vote people into Congress, I don't think anybody expects them to do what we want anymore.
Nope.
So, but ideally, we would expect them to do what we want. So if that were to happen in the United States, and say, most of the population lives on the coast, so we'll say, like Maine, New York, Connecticut, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, California, Washington, and Oregon. That should cover like 60% of the population. Just decide that they don't want to listen to Washington, D.C. anymore. Do you think that Washington, D.C. would listen to the majority or the minority on that?
Well, It's a good question.
I myself would say that they'd probably listen to the minority.
Yeah.
I don't think Washington's going to give up its power.
Yeah. It would have to be forced into giving up its power.
So democracy is not peaceful. It appears peaceful because you get to vote. You have the illusion of choice. You don't have the choice to be able to opt out of the system. You can say, you can leave the country. Nobody's going to leave their home. That's their home. That's their property. They want to be with their friends and family. Maybe they don't like being told what damn light bulb to use. That's all. Shocking, right? Democracy's not peaceful. That Kyle got that absolutely wrong.
Yeah, he gets it wrong.
Obviously, it is used for regime change.
Yeah, he got that right.
To really get a regime change, democracy is almost never used because you're going to have elements of the regime throughout every election. So, like in the United States, you had Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, and we're about to have Trillery or Trump or Killer, whatever nickname you want to use for those two idiots that are running for president. Sorry, Gary Johnson, I'm not including you, because, well, yeah, that's a different story. So whoever's next, do you think that whoever is the next president is going to change the head of the Federal Reserve? No, they're going to keep him on. Do you think they might have some of the same advisors, national security advisors? Of course. Do you think any of the bureaucrats in the thousands, hundreds of thousands of positions out there are going to change? No. The regime doesn't change. Aspects of the regime change. So you might have a more, not this election because Trump is extraordinarily liberal for being a conservative. But if you had, like, Ronald Reagan. When Ronald Reagan came in, did you have some aspects that changed? Yeah, you had a more conservative liberal regime. You had a conservative liberal. Okay? Now, people are going to be angry I said that, but modern-day conservatives, even Ronald Reagan, were liberal compared to conservatives back in the 40s and 50s, like Robert Taft, Mr. Republican himself, was extraordinarily conservative compared to Ronald Reagan. So, all you have is a conservative liberal. So aspects of it changed. The rhetoric certainly changed with Ronald Reagan, but did much change? No, we had a ballooning deficit. He expanded the government. He raised taxes. I know people don't think he did, but he did. So certain aspects of the regime will change, but you will never have regime change, complete regime change, with democracy. You're only going to have that with, like, Venezuelan. What the Venezuelans are doing right now, or what happened during the Arab Spring, was somebody's getting either decapitated or shot. Something like that's going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
So when you think regime change, think the French Revolution.
Oh, jeez. Well, oh, man. Wow, that's, you sounded a heck of a lot more educated than any of that comment from Kyle. Which is very common.
Well, you know, I debated him quite often. I had to stop because it was it would waste my time. He would never quit. So, and I have a family that I would rather spend time with rather than debating another monarchist. He seems to think that attacking ANCAPs furthers liberty more so than, you know, actually spreading liberty, which I find weird.
Yeah, it's funny because I've talked to a lot of monarchists that, you know, I tell them, okay, we're going to fight all the way to minarchy. And, of course, I tell them, I'm not going to stop at minarchy, obviously. Because I feel like the more people get towards minarchy and they like the liberty, they'll be like, cool, I like this. And then I was like, maybe then we'll fight about it. But we're not even there. We're not even there. We're totally the opposite of there.
I always tell people, I said, I'll fight with you guys. Until we cut the government down 95%, so that we can squabble over that last 5% when we get there, and we'll break at some point in time if we ever get there, which I don't see happening in my life, but hopefully in my son's life, you'll see that. But yeah, I'd rather work with minarchists, libertarians. I don't care who. I wouldn't work with Hillary Clinton. I'd work with almost anybody. Yeah. To get to that point. But I refuse to kill people, so I'm stopping at that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do
that. So I can't work for Team Hillary.
Yeah, for real. Sorry, Hillary, not happening. But
just kidding, Hillary. Don't kill me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No. NSA. Don't send this to her. But yeah, I just like we're on the same team at this point. I know some anarchists are like, well, the ideology is poisonous. I'm like, yeah, because immediately, you know, I on the campaign trail, I'm like, abolish the omnipotent state now. Let's teach them about liberty. They don't even know about libertarianism yet. Like, I'm not going to go out and tell them to abolish the state. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, that's the people. I have yet to meet. Okay, I take that back. I have met one person that has went out and done that. But in his defense, he was excited, brand new ANCAP, didn't really care. Most people, they'll find something, unless they're on the internet. They'll find something that they have in common with the person. Oh, you don't like Obamacare? Well, let me tell. What can we do about that? Let's figure something out. Well, here's historical references on what you can do. Why don't we work in this direction? Okay, cool. So we, you know, nullify Obamacare with a conservative. Maybe we hook up with a liberal and be like, hey, why don't we get this medical marijuana thing going? You know, talk to them about things that they're already pissed off about. Everybody in this country is pissed off about something that the government is doing. You can connect literally with everybody on one thing, one single point that the government has done that has pissed them off. And that's, to me, there's no need to be a broad tint. I shouldn't say that because it makes it sound like I'm talking about libertarianism. Find a single one thing that you want to work on and work on that. Find a single issue. I'm not talking to you specifically, Kim, but anybody out there listening. Find a single issue that you are passionate about, whether it be letting people who are sick try drugs or medical marijuana or guns or something. Pick a single issue and fight for that. So you can show people that, hey, there is a way to fight against the federal government. Whether you're liberal and you want marijuana legal, or you're conservative and you want Obama and the federal government out of your bedroom, there's things that you can connect with everybody about.
Yeah. And then I think usually the evidence that people say ANCAPs are poisonous and destroying things usually gives me the key that they're not actually getting off the internet to know that anything about ANCAPs. They're only talking about the internet. I'm all like, you're just proving to me that you're actually not getting off the internet and going out and seeing any ANCAPs talking to anybody. So that's your first problem. Get out of your computer room and actually go talk and work with people outside, because, yeah, we don't do that in real life. It just does not happen. I actually don't even do that on Facebook, but anyway, yeah, come on,
guys. On my personal page, I don't go out there and, you know, say I'm going to abolish the state. I you know, I'll post things that get people thinking. Even on Facebook, I try not to go full ANCAP, because it's, yeah, you don't want to tell somebody, you know, it's like telling somebody that's never had alcohol to drink Everclear. This is a horrible idea. Start off with something like, I don't want to give any advertisements out. Start off with something light, you know. Go to Mass go to Mass and you can get a shot of wine, you know, for, what's that called?
Lord's Supper?
What it's called. The Eucharist or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Lord's Supper, Eucharist, yeah.
So, you know, you start them off with something small. You don't smack somebody in the face with a bottle of Everclear. You don't, unless they're already a libertarian, then you can talk about ANCAP stuff. But conservative or liberal, no, you don't turn them off, and then you've already made that impression that that's what you want to do. You have to, you want to start off small, lead them down that path, and they might not even go very far. But if you can make a coalition with liberals to abolish something or get rid of something, and the conservative to get rid of something, then do it. That's what the 10th Amendment Center does. They've hooked up with the ACLU, they've hooked up with conservatives, they don't care. They get around. They'll use whoever to get rid of whatever.
Yeah, that's the point, is to get the government out of everyone's lives. Everyone. Somehow, some way.
Yeah, not to knock the, you know, libertarian candidates, but the presidential candidates, I should say. But that's what, you know, the 14-day-old libertarian Bill Weld, I don't think, understands. It's more about, it's not just about getting people out of your pocketbook and your bedroom, okay? It's about all of it. Mm-hmm. You want to you want to get it out of everything. Now, I'm not saying Bill Weld needs to go and espouse and cap beliefs, you know, but maybe try to be a little bit more libertarian when you're running as a libertarian. Just some free advice, Bill Weld.
There you go. I hope you're listening to the podcast. But
hey, if you got Tom Woods to listen, I'm sure you can get Bill Weld to listen.
Well, that's because Christian.
I take that back. Tom Woods is at least educated.
Oh yeah, dang, yeah. Tom Woods has got like so much education on him. So, but I could talk to you for hours. So we probably should end it here. But so where can people read your stuff?
Well, I write for the Tenth Amendment Center on occasion. I started writing for them under a pseudonym, so it's under Patrick Taylor. I know. When I first started writing, I didn't want, you know, my bosses and stuff to figure out what I was, you know, writing about. Because where I used to work, they actually used to, you know, Google search your name and stuff. So now I don't really care. I got a skill set that's high enough in demand that if I get fired, I can go somewhere else. But I write there. I write on occasion for the Jason Stapleton program. I write on my own blog, which I am currently transferring over to libertyparent.com. And then you can find it there. That's where most of my stuff is going to end up being now. I haven't transferred everything over there yet, but I'm slowly but surely working on it. And there'll be a podcast soon, which you're going to have to hop on.
Oh, right on.
Because it's not going to be just about... It's going to be about liberty and parenting, both topics, but it's not exclusively about parenting or exclusively about liberty, so...
Oh, good. Because I'm all like, so the other name, my cats, because I have the kids, man, I have kids.
So, but that should be up and running here. I hope to get it up by the first couple episodes up this month, but it'll be also at thelibertyparent.com.
Right on. Well, if you guys want to find us on Twitter, you can find us at Newborn Liberty, and you can also hit us up on email. And that would be newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes. Apparently, I think we're on Podbean now because somebody sent a comment on Podbean. And I was like, how the heck do you end up on Podbean? That's weird. But Stitcher, all that good stuff. And find us on Facebook and like the page. And then, until next time, guys, thank you. And thank you, Sean, for coming on and... I plan to have you on because I'm hoping that we get to do a Constitution series, because I think that'd be great.
Well, I'm always open to be doing that, so that was like the worst sentence I've ever put together grammatically.
Yeah, I was not going to say anything.
But yeah, I'm open to being on anytime.
All right, guys, and then until then, talk to you next time.